the end of February, the windows of the cathedral church were cleaned. You can see that they look nice inside and outside, they were clean. And like most things that are dirty, once they're clean, you realize how dirty they were before they're clean. You know what this feels like in life. After the windows here were clean, the windows on the rectory were cleaned on the outside. And this is not pertinent to the homily so much, but it was a really traumatic experience for my dog. He's a little over two, he's very excitable. And I think when he saw this man scaling a ladder, he thought that he was trying to break in to do the cleaning. So he lost his mind. He went crazy for a little bit, but he's better now. I use the image of these windows because as Christians, we're called to be temples in a way, we're called to be holy dwelling places, houses of worship. And when Lent invites us on Ash Wednesday and receiving ashes to turn away from sin and be faithful to the gospel, we have an invitation to purify, to renew the temple, the holy dwelling, the house of worship that is our lives. We know from previous Lents, from the Christian life as a whole, that this isn't always easy to do. Think of a line from C.S. Lewis. He said, "No man knows how bad he can be until he tries very hard to be good." It's true, in a way. Once we really try to get our act together, clean ourselves up, really be focused, we realize what a challenge that can be in our lives. Ultimately, though, we can't fix ourselves. The one who is most able to do the work that needs to be done in us is the Holy Spirit. The best that we can do is to cooperate with the Holy Spirit in such a way as to allow the Spirit to do this work in us. It's the same Holy Spirit that leads Christ into the desert in today's Gospel from Luke chapter 4. The same Spirit who leads us into this season of Lent and throughout the entirety of the Christian life. How does the Spirit lead us? We might think of the last line of the Our Father, "Deliver us not into temptation, lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil." The Spirit is the one leading us away from temptation, delivering us from evil. The best definition that I've come across for temptation was from a priest, psychologist. He was giving a lecture to newly ordained priests a number of years ago. St. Meinrad happened to be there for this workshop. This was his definition of temptation. He said, "Temptation is the truth twisted and used against us, which taken to its ultimate extreme is an attack on God." It's kind of a fascinating definition. Temptation is the truth twisted and used against us, which taken to its ultimate extreme is an attack on God. What does this look like? We might think of Genesis chapter 3 and the fall of Adam and Eve. What's the truth of the circumstance in which they find themselves? In paradise, they are made in the image and likeness of God and created to experience deep communion with God and all of creation. So how is this truth twisted? The serpent invites Adam and Eve not so much to grow and becoming more and more like God. He twists this so that they're invited to become gods. And ultimately, this is an attack on the true God because it sets Adam and Eve in competition with God. We might think, too, of today's gospel. We could apply the same definition. What is the truth of the situation in which Christ finds himself in the desert? In John chapter 8, he says to the disciples, "I came down from heaven not to do my own will, but the will of the one who sent me." I came down from heaven, not to do my own will, but the will of the one who sent me. And in a way, this is the meaning of the desert, to embrace the will ever more deeply of the one who sent him. And the enemy, the deceiver, Satan, twists this truth. He twists it in such a way that he invites Christ. He doesn't say it in these words, but it's as if he says, "Why do the will of the one who sent you if you can do your own will? Why not make stones become bread? Why not bow before me and inherit power and authority over all kingdoms? Why not throw yourself off the temple so that the angels can catch you, can save you? Why do the will of the one who sent you when you can do your own will?" The truth is twisted. Christ resists temptation to teach us how to resist, because we too are sent on a mission. And temptation often whispers to us, why do the will of the one who sent you, who gave you life, who presented you into the world, when you can do your own will instead? Lent is a place, the desert is a place as well, where there's an absence of distractions. And in this place, there's an invitation to decide what is true and what is false, or where is the truth twisted. We might think to ourselves by asking the question as we begin Lent, where is truth in my life? In whom is there truth? In what practices, in what actions is there truth? Lent invites us to cling to truth where we find it in our lives, but also to ask the question, where is there illusion? Where is there falsity? Where is the truth twisted? A way to approach this is from a line that I heard a professor mention in college. He was an English professor, and he said that all of marketing is based on two principles. Now, if you're in marketing, this is a bit of an overgeneralization. He's an English teacher. What does he know about marketing? But there's some truth in what he says. He said all of marketing is based on two concepts. You need this to be happy, and you're not happy now. There's a way in which temptation whispers this in our ear. This will make you happy. In fact, you need this to become happy because you're not happy right now. It's an illusion. It's the truth twisted in us because no thing, no object has the power to make one happy. Ultimately, happiness is found only in God. When we see the illusion, it becomes easier, not completely easy, but easier to do the will of God. This question, what is truth, will reappear later in the season of Lent. In John chapter 18, there's this fascinating encounter between Jesus and Pilate. At the end of it, Pilate says to Jesus, what is truth? It's a fascinating, evocative question, but it's a bit of a cliffhanger because Christ doesn't respond to Pilate in that moment. Pilate leaves and he goes to the crowd and he says, I find no guilt in him. So if you think of these words, what is truth? It's been pointed out before that this phrase in Latin, quid est veritas, can be reassembled without adding any letters or taking any letters away to present the formula est vir qui ad est, which means he is the one before you. So the answer to the question, what is truth, can be said, he is the one before you. And the one before Pilate is Christ himself. As we begin the season of Lent to pass through, we might think to ourselves that we are traveling with Christ, and he is the one we are to keep before us in this journey through Lent.